like to introduce you to our first speaker, Matthias.
Yeah.
What are you going to talk about?
I'm going to talk about USB flash drives, crypto USB flash drives. And I want to show a proof of concept attack about getting unauthorized access to a USB crypto mass storage device.
Your time goes up now.
Okay. So, welcome everybody. My name is Matthias, and as I mentioned before, I want to show you how to gain unauthorized access to your USB flash storage device that was actually built to prevent this kind of attack. In this lightning life hack, I will attack a SanDisk Crusoe Enterprise 5th edition USB flash drive I've got here, but you can also attack other USB flash drives that are using the same technology as this SanDisk USB flash drive with the proof of concept software tool I will show in just about 2 minutes. Yeah, so what I just want to show is that the history of IT security teaches us that small mistakes often have a big impact, especially when it comes to rather complex IT security products like this USB flash drive. And what is also special about this kind of USB flash drive is that it has a FIPS certificate. So government and military authorities are allowed to use these flash drives. But they're not as secure as they should be and as marketing tells us. So what I'm going to do is I hopefully try to show you that I can get access to such a USB flash drive within, well, about a few seconds. So here's the live demo. It won't take long, I hope. So what I've got here is a SanDisk Crusoe Enterprise FIPS stick. I'll insert this in my USB port. And now it should just show up. Yeah, here it is. So we have two devices. One is an emulated CD-ROM partition, and the other one is the actual mass storage device where the protected data is stored. If I try to access the mass storage device, I cannot do it because it's locked in hardware. So this stick has security features like hardware-based AES 256-bit encryption, there's a mandatory access control, we have strong password enforcement, and there also is a lockdown mode. That means if you have 10 failed lock-on attempts, the stick is locked permanently. So that's what marketing tells us. Okay, I have disabled autorun on this machine because I don't like it that programs start automatically when I insert a device, so I have to start the launcher manually. I'll do this here. Here you can see there's the Enterprise launcher, and I hope that it will start. Okay. So it takes a while because it gets copied to the temporary folder of the current user, then it gets unpacked. Okay. So I have to hurry up. Okay, so here's the login device. Now I try a password, I don't know it, and try to unlock the device, so failed on the first attempt. I try some more, just to see another error message, and show you that it's serious about the lockdown mode they've implemented. Okay, so no success at all, and here it is. Now I have 4 attempts left, now it's 3, now it's 2.
One.
No. Now I want to access the data. So what I do now is just launching the proof of concept tool. This is this one, yeah, fancy window, because it's Windows. And here, just press the unlock button, and I hope that this is the place where the magic happens. So unlock, and it tells me success. Now you can unlock the FIPS, yeah, certified USB drive with an arbitrary password. Arbitrary also means wrong, so I just use the same password and press the login button again. And now,
Five more seconds.
Okay. Yeah, but I think I'm done, because now I'll have a look at the mass storage device, and here it is. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow.
One more thing, you can read about this vulnerability There was a paper published a few days ago, and Sandisk and Kingston already fixed this. So update your crypto USB flash drives if you have one with the old software version, because it's just a simple software bug, but, well, it has a big impact.
Is my mic working?
Keep going.
I'll keep going, yes, my mic's working. Okay, right now we've got a surprise. Some hackers really worked on some amazing stuff, so they're coming to present it. Please welcome them. They're going to connect to the Beamer. Team Telephone, that's who's going to present this. No? Team Techcom.
Sorry about this, but...
Switch with Alt Tab to the media player.
Yeah. One more. Alt Tab.
Ah.
No. Play.
Above.
Oben.
Links oben.
Well, thank you, Team Techcom. Okay, is there any one of the Lightning Talk speakers who needs to leave early?
Yeah, there's one. Vincent? No. Sorry, Alexander, I'm sorry. Yeah, go. Hurry.
Yeah, okay. Well, welcome. You don't have any sound yet, so can somebody please give him some sound? A mic? and connected. Well, that was an amazing lightning talk, or at least a show. There wasn't any talk. So, in the meantime, everybody leaving today?
No?
Who's leaving today? Who's leaving tomorrow? Who's going to stay forever? Okay, well, cool to see. Who's going to come back next year? Not everybody? Who's not? Why not? Okay, that's a good reason. Okay, how did you like it? What was your best talk? Any favorite talks? Which ones? Yeah. Okay, just a few more time before the next lightning talk. The time in between might be more than the actual talk. Let's see. Okay. Okay, the talk afterwards. Who's going to give another talk today? You. What's your name?
My name is Andreas.
Andreas. And what is your talk about?
I will talk about the German 10 generators with optical interfaces. It's a German talk.
It's a German talk. Okay. And what's the problem with it?
It's not a problem. I will search for potential... I've been searching for the interface and how the data is transmitted between the
contact,
between the monitor and the optical tank generator.
Okay, so it's more of a challenge.
I hope.
Okay, cool. Are you up for it? Open BTS? Up for the talk? Okay, what's your name?
Test. Is it okay? Okay, yep. So my name is Alexander Chemeris, and I want to present you OpenBTS project once more. This project was mentioned many, many times during this conference, but I want to give you a special presentation about their not a hack usage of this project, but about their building a better life for poor in a developing world, and with their subtitle, Can Open Source Be a Driver of a Real Social Revolution? This is their usual day in Africa. This is Tanzania, and you can see that it's pretty much different from what we have here. And that's a place where many technologies which you have here just does not work. For example, what's the most important and the most hype technology right here? Mobile technology. I think it's kind of 3G or 4G or maybe 5G, but it just does not work in that place. The most important mobile technology in this place is 2G or just plain GSM. And so what's the problem is that in developed world mobile technology was their evolution after the fixed wired lines were already had a great penetration. But in Africa, you have very, very small penetration of fixed phones. You see, in the South Africa, that's the biggest economy in Africa, you have only 10% penetration of fixed lines. That's very, very small. Other countries are even worse because South Africa is the strongest economy in Africa. So for many people in Africa, even buying a mobile phone is a big investment. If you look at the village phone of Grameen Foundation, you see that they provide ability to get a loan to buy a mobile phone. It's just can't go to a shop and buy a mobile phone with cash. And the connection fees are very, very high in Africa compared to month income of people who live there. Many people who own mobile phones in Africa spend half of their month income paying bills on mobile phone. Just imagine if you're paying the half of your month income on mobile phones. To really be useful there, mobile bills should be below the $2 US dollars per month. Okay, sure, that's fine. Okay. So there are some more facts here. I'll skip them. And now OpenBTS is not a true GSM. It looks like GSM for mobile phone, but it looks like a SIP for the network. And with this approach, it's possible to build much more efficient GSM networks, which draws much less power and are more efficient in many, many other ways. And of course, it's open source. It's a project started by David Burgess, who was there in the last year, but this year he didn't manage to come here, sorry. And we need your help. We need more programmers who can help us implement more GSM features, more SIP features. We need a SIP specialist who can help us build the use cases and the configurations. And we need lawyers. That's the most important one, because GSM covered with many patents, and there are many legal issues in deploying this. And thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Okay, that was an amazing talk. Andreas, do you want to go next? Okay, who else is giving a talk?
Well, it should be up in first row. Everybody's in first row.
Okay, you're giving a talk. What's your name?
Benjamin Kellerman.
Benjamin, what's your talk about?
My talk is about what you can do with LaTeX and TIX and graphics and GIMP if you mix all up to one multi-tool.
What language is it in?
I think in English.
In English, cool. Then you're going to be after Andreas. So what did you think of the last talk about phones in Africa? Like it? Come on, give it up. Apparently in every city in Africa, there's only one person with a mobile phone, and he charges the entire village for it. And that's how an entire village is connected to the outside world and even being educated, because they don't have teachers anymore. They just do it by mobile phones instead of computers. Computers are a big failure in Africa. There are some organizations who are even using the old iPhones and Blackberries, and they send them to Africa because that makes a bigger difference than all the laptops and computers, because they have to pay way too much. All kinds of people want to earn a living from it. So the policeman, everybody wants some money before you can get a computer there. But a BlackBerry is just small, so they don't see it if you carry it to Africa. Okay. You're wired?
Hello.
Yes. Okay, Andreas, the floor is yours. Give it up for Andreas.
Okay. Okay. Hallo zusammen, mein Name ist Andreas Schirmer. Ich möchte euch einen kurzen Überblick über Tankgeneratoren mit optischer Schnittstelle geben. Was sind Tankgeneratoren mit optischer Schnittstelle? Sie werden seit circa 2009 von den Banken und Sparkassen ausgegeben. Es gibt bisher schon TAN-Generatoren ohne optische Schnittstelle, die arbeiten folgendermaßen. Es wird ein sogenannter Startcode in den Tankgenerator eingegeben, zusammen mit der ganz normalen EC-Karte. In Folge werden die werden transaktionsspezifische Parameter abgefragt, zum Beispiel die Empfängerkontonummer und der Betrag. Dadurch soll erreicht werden, dass die TAN, die Transaktionsnummer, auch tatsächlich an eine spezifische Transaktion gebunden ist. Sprich, dass diese TANs nicht von Phishern oder anderen abgefangen werden können und für andere Transaktionen missbraucht werden können. Dieses Verfahren hat einen Nachteil. Es ist relativ aufwendig oder zeitaufwendig und umständlich, die Kontonummern, Beträge etc., Startcodes in den TAN-Generator einzugeben. Deswegen wurde durch das ZKA ist ein Zusammenschluss oder eine Normierungsorganisation der deutschen Banken, ein neuer Standard geschaffen, eben diese optischen TAN-Generatoren. ZKA spezifizierte auch zum Beispiel HBC, FinTS oder die Geldkarte. Und dieses Verfahren ist unter unterschiedlichen Marketingbezeichnungen bei den Banken inzwischen erhältlich. Wieso schaue ich mir das Ganze an? Ich will wissen, wie diese einzelnen Komponenten, sprich der Generator, die EC-Karte etc. zusammenspielen, wie diese Kommunikation zwischen dem Flickercode, den ich euch gleich zeigen werde, und dem Gerät abläuft. Ob sich daraus Angriffsmöglichkeiten ergeben. Das Red Team Pentesting hatte hierzu bereits Ende November etwas veröffentlicht und ob es Anwendungsbereiche neben dem Online-Banking gibt. Kurz zu den Komponenten, wie gesagt, dieses Lesegerät mit einem Smartcard-Slot, Zifferntastatur, alphanumerischen Display und das Wichtigste, die 5 Fototransistoren. Gibt es von verschiedenen Herstellern, kosten ca. 10 bis 20 Euro, von daher ist dieses Verfahren eigentlich ganz interessant. Das zweite ist die Smartcard und eben der Flickercode. Auf diesen konzentriere ich mich insbesondere. Dieser Flickercode wird durch verschiedene Methoden aus einem Eingabeparameter erzeugt und die Übertragung an das Gerät wird über einen Flickercode, der leider hier im PDF nicht vernünftig funktioniert, an dieses Gerät übertragen. Es gibt eine Initialisierungssequenz, die die Datensequenz im Flicker trennt. Das sind diese 7 Sequenznummern. Und die Daten werden mit diesem Schema übertragen. Der Eingabeparameter ist eigentlich interessant. Darin ist eine Prüfsumme enthalten. Oder 2 Prüfsummen. Eine ist eine einfache XOR-Prüfsumme, die ließ sich relativ einfach herausfinden. Was jetzt nicht so trivial ist, eine weitere Prüfsumme, dort bin ich noch auf der Suche. Es wäre schön, wenn jemand mit mehr mathematischem Background hier etwas mithelfen könnte. Es finden sich noch weitere Informationen auf diesen Links. Insbesondere unter Bitinfarkt Chiptan habe ich auch diese Slides zur Verfügung gestellt und valide Codes veröffentlicht. Wenn noch jemand Fragen dazu hat, das war jetzt alles sehr gedrängt, kann mich gern noch kontaktieren. Danke.
Ah, danke sehr, Andreas. Danke. Benjamin, please. Yes, go there. Okay, there. Okay, who's also giving a presentation? Nick.
I'm just here looking for somebody. Is there an Alex C. from the GSM project in the room? Raise your hand. Alex C. from the GSM project. Okay, great. Thank you.
Nobody here. Okay. Yes?
Coordinate, because he doesn't know what you're doing, and I don't know what you're doing.
Okay.
So we need to talk about the order, okay?
Okay, that's okay.
Now you continue.
Okay, you want to have a specific order?
Yeah, well, but first now, take the time.
Can I have this mic?
Take the time.
Hello? Okay. Hello, I'm Benjamin Kellermann, and maybe somebody has seen my talk yesterday with these graphics and asked himself, yo, how to do these things inside LaTeX, where we have graphics and arrows between and these things. And I think maybe some of you know the arrows from Tix and this really cool package. So many thanks to Till Tanta, who wrote all the cool LaTeX packages.
Yeah. So, and what I did is just use Tix and graphics and GIMP together, and what comes out is this one, my Tix graphics package. Because the thing is, sometimes you have some picture and you go to GIMP and place your cursor anywhere and you have the coordinates down here, but it's another coordinate system than in Tix. So, and I wrote this package, and you can write, so begin Tix graphics and give some options. Say, okay, this is the width of everything, the size of every, and the file name. And inside you can just place a GIMP node where these coordinates are the same like this. And then you can place these X, and you have this X inside exactly where your scene is in GIMP, which makes everything really more easy. So yes, it's very easy to do this. The next thing I did is, okay, you can paint some ellipse. You can paint in GIMP as well. And then you have here this box where you have can read the coordinates. And if you put in these coordinates into a GIMP ellipse, you get this calculated into the Tix environment, and then it draws the ellipse in Tix. So, okay, great. But you can do this with a rectangle as well. But the really cool thing is, sometimes you want to do things like this, where you have parts of the picture zoomed out and make arrows inside the zoomed picture. So therefore, I wrote some new environment, which is the GIMP zoom graphic, where you specify, okay, I want to have a zoom factor of 2.5, and you give two coordinates, one of the inside picture and one of the outside picture. It calculates where these two points are laid together, and inside this one, you anywhere specify the insert picture, where the picture is inserted. So why the insert picture? Because you can draw some clipping area beforewards, and then you can do something like this. I hope you see it very good. So there I painted some path in the outside picture. Here I painted the same path as clipping area in the inside picture, and you can clip any of the picture in on any area. And the cool thing is, if you change something on the picture, it will change everything, and you don't need to do this inside GIMP and these things anymore. But you can use these nodes and GIMP nodes and all the thing. Okay, you can find it here. Right, doesn't work. No. Graphics. Oh, this one. Okay, here / Tix graphics, or if you have questions. So, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Benjamin. Okay, Vincent, you're up next for the future of hacker meetings.
Benjamin, here is the stick with all the slides. Wir können Benjamins Laptop benutzen. Nein, sein Rechner funktioniert.
Okay, Vincent's next for Future of Hacker Meetings. And afterwards with Droid Army is... Who's going to do the Droid Army? Okay, what's that going about? What's your name?
Hi, this is Razor. I'm talking about machine communication through an Android phone. This means that you could control robots or make data acquisition, and then submit them to a, let's say, data log to Google Spreadsheets. But this is just a vision, and I'm looking for people to realize this.
Okay, thank you. No. Okay, I know, but I just try to fill up the spaces in between. Okay. Okay, I will do that. Thank you very much, Sven. Floor is yours.
Okay, hello everyone. Some of you might have seen me on Thursday, so it's my second lightning talk. I will talk to you about the future of hackers meeting. It's a result of a discussion I had with Kindex yesterday. Kindex found me at first to talk a bit about how to prevent some clashes between HackerFest, and we ended up with those slides and content. So first, we begin to see a slight problem with different hackers meeting. Well, mostly this one, as Congress gets way too big, sold out on Sunday, 4 days, and we can't even cover a half of the whole Congress, plus all the videos. It's really big. So, what to do? Well, there are many, repeat this as many times as you wish, many smaller events scheduled in 2010 and the year before, and I'm sure there will be really many scheduled events after. While we were doing the slides, we did a little list of all the events that were to happen in 2010. So we have, for example, the GPN9 Karlsruhe, the Hackathon Ego Summit in Paris, Brooklyn and Brussels, HSF in Toulouse, Brazen Anthropic Congress in Dyon, France, Contention Technologique at Paris, SIGINT at Köln, Easterhag, Munich, ICMP Erlangen, DeepSec Austria, PlumberCon in Vienna, ETH0, ACK Meeting, FRAC, ESC09 in Venice. Well, no, that was ESC010. And STV Numeric near Nice. Yeah, there are really a truckload of events scheduled for the future. Plus, unnoticed events like Nothing Will Happen in Croatia, or smaller regular events. Smaller regular events in hackerspace such as the MetaLab Hackathon every 2 months, or the Wireless Battle Mesh flying around Paris, Brussels, and Italy. But here we have another problem, being the clashes between the different events. So we had this problem in 2009, a clash between the Goulash Programmiert NAFT, the 8th edition, and the Hackerspace Fest of 2009. So how to prevent such clash and allow people to organize their travel in the most efficient way? Yeah, so the conclusion we reached was the better way to do this is very stupid, is just using hackerspace.org calendars and lists to announce all the events, all the talks, all the workshops, all the events. I went this morning on hackerspace.org, checked the wiki, and yeah, the wiki is not that. There's lots of events missing. From all the events I quoted earlier, less than a quarter was already on this wiki, even if they are advertised right now at the CCC. So what's left to do is, just go to those URLs, hackerspace.org wiki events, to publish, to announce your event, and use the different mailing lists available at hackerspace.org wiki communication, especially announce, to advertise, so that other people can know what's going on, and to get to have a kind of a hacker vacation club all around the globe with hacker conferences. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much, Vincent. Okay, next is the Droid Army. Please. Okay, and after the Droid Army, there's another German lecture about Apps-Gucke. Do I pronounce it all right? Who's giving it? Dorothy? Oh, that's you. Okay. Can you stand up and please tell me what's about?
Yeah, I should try in English now. I just want to speak about some... Yeah, people who try to get money from other people in the internet, and what can we do to prevent such a business?
Too bad it isn't in English, because I would have loved to understood. Okay, so maybe someone wants to translate it for me afterwards. Okay, so now it's about the Droid Army. Are you almost ready for it? For the future of hacker meetings, I think it is really important to communicate with each other. So please put everything online or in some closed area so not everybody knows it. And I think the Droid Army is ready to go. You've got the mic? Yes.
This is Ray. Ich bin Reza. Ich,
Es funktioniert, aber...
Es ist auf.
Okay.
Okay, hältst du es bitte ans Kinn. Und wenn du dich nicht hörst, ist es zu leise.
Okay. Yes. Hi. Ich bin Reza. Ich möchte mit der Android, mit dem Android-Betriebssystem und einem Smartphone eine Robotersteuerung aufbauen. Das gab es in der Vergangenheit für das iPhone und für Windows Mobile Endgeräte, aber nicht für das Android-Betriebssystem. Und dazu wurden die Schnittstellen bisher genutzt, USB und Bluetooth. Die Problematik ist jedoch, dass es kaum Smartphones mit USB-Host-Modus gibt. Das möchten die Hersteller teilweise nicht umsetzen. Gäbe es sowas, könnte das so aussehen, als dass man das Smartphone mit der Connectivity, die es mitbringt, ins Internet verbinden lässt, um dann Sensordaten über einen Mikrocontroller aufzunehmen oder Aktoren anzusprechen. Jetzt ist es so, dass dieser Mikrocontroller in der hier rechts eventuell auch nicht notwendig wäre. Dazu zeige ich nach im Bild. Denn das Smartphone müsste das eigentlich auch direkt selbst machen können. Ja, in der Vergangenheit war es ja so, dass eben die Chips viele elektronische Bauelemente ersetzt haben. Also hier hat eine Substitution stattgefunden. Und ich denke, in der Messsteuer- und Regelungstechnik könnte man eigentlich ein neues Kapitel aufschlagen, indem man das Smartphone andere Schaltungen ersetzen lässt. Denn ich möchte sehr schnell und unkompliziert Roboteranwendungen entwickeln, ohne mich darum zu kümmern zu müssen, wie integriere ich jetzt ein GSM-Modul oder ein Kameramodul. Das gibt's ja alles schon fertig. Warum soll ich das selbst entwickeln? Man spricht da auch von sogenannten Off-the-Shelf-Lösungen. Hier hatte ich jetzt mal ausprobiert eine Data-Acquisition-Karte von NI und ein Windows-Mobile-Smartphone mit USB-Host-Modus verbunden. Und hier sehen wir jetzt keinen separaten Mikrocontroller dazwischen geschaltet. Und dann gibt es noch ein Projekt mit dem Arduino Open-Source-Mikrocontroller vom MIT. Und da wurde, Amarino heißt das Projekt, über das Android-Smartphone so einen Mikrocontroller angesprochen, allerdings über Bluetooth, weil wiederum der USB-Host-Modus nicht verfügbar ist an diesen Geräten. Ja, warum die Android-Plattform? Mir ist die Google-Phobie bekannt, aber man könnte doch viele Anwendungen sehr einfach integrieren zu können. Also als Beispiel, dass man mehrere Roboter hat, die gemeinsam Daten in eine Google Docs-Datei einpflegen und so die Kollaborationswerkzeuge von den Cloud Computing Tools praktisch sich dieser bedient. Oder man könnte Object Recognition machen über Google Goggles und was da eben alles noch möglich ist. Vielen Dank.
Well, thank you so much. Okay, please, about this scam, do you want to point out, or you just need a microphone? Or do you also have a presentation? Okay. Before we start with the scam, please, can I have some hands? Who's giving a presentation today from now on? Okay, keep your hands up. I'm just going to ask you your name and your topic.
Hello, stand up. Yeah, hi, I'm Pablo. I'm going to talk about the student protests in Austria and the role of the internet.
Okay, student protests in Austria.
Should I stand? Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm going to talk about swarm robotics that you can build at home.
Okay, you can build at home. Another talk over here.
My name is Igor. I'm going to talk about a remote controller with your mobile phone for media players in your computer.
Okay, sounds really cool. How about you?
Hi. My name is Geraldine, and I'm going to present the projects of FAT Lab, Free Art and Technology Lab.
Okay, thank you. I saw some more hands at that side.
Uh,
I'm going to talk about GarlicCat, which is a follow-up project from OnionCat, and it's in anonymous VPN software.
Thank you so much. That's everybody who's giving a presentation? Cool, thank you. Floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you. My name is Wolfgang Lautermann, and I want to talk in German. Ja. Okay, also ich bin der Wolfgang und möchte kurz erzählen über diese Internetbetrüger, kennt sicher jeder aus den Medien, und was wir dagegen unternehmen könnten. Ja, kurz, worum geht's? Wie funktioniert das ganze Ding? Was sollte man tun, wenn es wirklich passiert ist? Und ja, was ist die Ursache, warum das so gut funktioniert? Gut, ich nehme an, die meisten kennen das ganze Ding aus den Medien. Man sucht irgendwelche gratis, Open-Source-Software, OpenOffice, Firefox etc. Vor allem Internet-User, die sich nicht so gut auskennen, die gerade neu im Internet sind. Gut, es ist gratis, es ist Open-Source. Man sucht es in Google, klickt auf den ersten Link. Der erste Link ist meistens eine Anzeige. Man kommt auf eine Seite, wo man sich irgendwie eintragen muss mit der Adresse. Gut, und man kann die Software downloaden. Ja, ein paar Tage oder Wochen später bekommt man Rechnungen, eigentlich sind es Drohbriefe oder Erpresserbriefe von einem Anwalt. Und ja, die meisten Leute zahlen halt leider ein. Und der Betrüger, der diese betrügerische Webseite gemacht hat, der muss eigentlich nur aufpassen, dass das Konto keine Overflow erzeugt und das Geld schnell genug wieder ausgeben. Wenn es wirklich passiert ist, lautet die allgemeine Regel, nicht zahlen. Man kann vom Vertrag in der Regel zurücktreten, beziehungsweise sollte man Verbraucherschutzorganisationen kontaktieren oder gegebenenfalls einen Anwalt, um wirklich nicht zu zahlen. Wobei, ich bin kein Anwalt und das ist keine Rechtsberatung. Ja, warum kommt das ganze Ding? Es gibt häufig, zum Beispiel hier bei OpenOffice, bei der offiziellen Webseite, sieht man hier unten, Warnung vor Download-Abo-Fallen. Sprich, die kümmern sich schon darum. Nur, wie kommen die Leute dazu, überall alle Daten einzugeben? Das heißt, wie macht man das richtig, wenn man jemanden Open-Source-Software empfiehlt? Einfach den Link, den richtigen Link mitschicken und nicht irgendwie die Leute in Google suchen lassen. Sie finden es, aber sie finden möglicherweise zuerst eine bezahlte Anzeige, wo Google auch ganz gut verdient, wo sie auf so eine Betrügerseite kommen. Und immer darauf hinweisen, dass man keine persönlichen Daten eingeben muss. Nur, da bin ich beim Thema, viel zu oft muss man sich registrieren und Daten eingeben. Warum? Weil bei unseren Seiten, ups, da muss ich weitermachen, schnell. Bei unseren Seiten, die Firmen, die auch Privatpersonen ins Netz stellen, sehr häufig, ja, man kann sich irgendwo rechts registrieren, füllen sie die Felder aus, ja, etc. Das nächste, Flickr, die Foto-Community, kennt jeder, gehört inzwischen Yahoo. Ja, was man da nicht alles ausfüllen soll. Name, Vorname, Geschlecht, Geburtsdatum, Wohnort, Postleitzahl, etc. Das ist, was geht dir das an? Punkt 1 und B, ja, da ist es noch gratis, aber da trage ich meine Daten ein. Nächster Punkt heißt ja online, ja, auch hier Daten eingeben und bitte die richtige E-Mail-Adresse eingeben. Wenn man eine Gratis-Mail-Adresse nimmt, GMX, dauert die Anmeldung einen Tag und eine Wegwerfadresse geht gar nicht. Was soll das? Ja, ORF Future Zone, der österreichische Rundfunk. Ja, Geschlecht, Geburtsdatum, wozu? Also Pornos habe ich da keine gefunden. Also wozu müssen die das wissen? Also, aber überall gibt es da Anmeldefelder, gleich in der Regel rechts oben. Ja, noch einmal dasselbe. Ja, also Achtung, Geburtsdatum und Geschlecht können nicht mehr geändert werden. Ja, gut. Noch einmal eine Zeitung, etc. Ja, Sun, Download gratis für Mitglieder. Salomo, ein Open-Source-Programm, GPL, LGPL, you have to register for the Download-Link. Was soll das? OpenOffice nochmal, was ist das fünfte Wort auf der Webseite? Rechts oben, Register, Login.
Das, also einfach weg mit dem Registrierungszwang. Macht Webseiten, wo man sich nicht registrieren muss, kann oder soll, weil dann ist es normal für alle Leute und ja, man gibt die Daten auch bei den Seiten der Internetbetrüger ein. Wenn man sich nicht registrieren muss, muss man sich nur bei den Webseiten der Internetbetrüger registrieren und dann machen das die Leute auch nicht. Das Motto, Datensparsamkeit. Danke.
Okay, thank you. Next talk is Garlicat. Can you please come to the stage, Garlicat? I'm still missing some speakers who were on the schedule. So where are the guys who breaking CQIP Verilog 2005? We had several emails. Okay. So we are still looking for Florian, who wanted to talk about the Austrian community SenseNet. Florian, we had some emails with you. Where are you? Shemi talked. 3D scanner again. We are looking for you since some day now. Neutrino, art project. Okay, so I hand the mic over to Chantal. She has something to announce.
I'll make the announcement later. Please go ahead, Carlicat. Please go ahead, Carlicat.
Okay, well, welcome everybody to my talk about Carlicat. I just want to briefly introduce this project. Actually, it's not a new project. It's just a follow-up project, as I told you before. About me, my name is Bernhard Fischer. I'm working at the University of Applied Sciences in St. Pölten. That's a small town in Austria. So what is Garlicat good for? Garlicat is for I2P what OnionCat is for Tor. So some of you might have listened to my talk last year here. It was a full-length talk about OnionCat. So it's actually the same. It's a follow-up project that is based on the I2P network. So what is it? Actually, it's a peer-to-peer VPN based on anonymization networks, and specifically for Garlicat, it's based on the I2P network. And what's really special for that network is that there is some specific addressing method. That means there is a correlation between the IP addresses used and the destination addresses used of the underlying network, which is I2P. So for those who do not know what I2P is, the I2P is an anonymization network like Tor is, and they're somehow comparable. It's not similar, but comparable. Okay, so what's the primary goal and the big benefit is that here in this case we use the internal services. In Tor they are called hidden services, and actually in I2P world they are called destinations. And that are services that are internal of the network. That means you get a both-sided anonymity. It's not just the client anonymous, it's also the service anonymous. So you don't know who is your destination, or actually where is your destination, okay? So, and what Garlicat does is it creates an anonymous network layer. Network layer means it's a layer 3 network, which means it's an IP network. So you can transport any kind of protocol you like through this network, which is originally not true for the original hidden services. They are based usually on TCP. So if you have such a hidden service, it's like an HTTP service or an IRC service or whatever. And with Garlicat or OnionCat respectively, you can transport any kind of IP data you like. So, and the big benefit is with that, we could build a completely anonymous, anonymous internet or anonymous network like the internet, but based on our anonymization networks, we can move all services, or we could move all those services into this network. Okay? Okay, further reading, come down to the Hack Center. We have a desk there somewhere in the middle. Come to me and talk to me. Then there is a webpage at cypherpunk.at/onioncat. Or, of course, I registered the project in the 26C3 wiki. Go there. There are some links where you can find further information. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Okay. Next is Geraldine. Geraldine, please come here. Okay, so up for the next talk, please. Do you have a presentation? Okay. Well, the announcement I'd like to make is please fill out the feedback forms. For the organization, it's very important that they know how you appreciated the talks and can improve for next year. So if you go to the plan, to the schedule, the Fahrplan, I think it's in German, you can click on the presentation you've been to, and you can fill out the feedback form. It's a green button at the right. So please do that. It's very short, and for the lightning talks in the comments, you can even say something about the separate talks. So thank you very much, and I think we're right into FatLab. Yes, you're up for it, Geraldine? Go ahead. No?
It's better for you to use this.
Okay.
And put it to your chin and leave it there. And if you don't hear yourself, you're too soft.
Okay. I don't hear myself.
Yeah, like this.
Okay.
Okay? And if you hear yourself, it's good.
Okay. I think it's good. Okay. Hi. I'm Geraldine, and I'm part of I'm one of the 19 fellows of FatLab, which is an online lab that stands for Free Art and Technology. And we work through IRC and through the website and through an email list where we kind of discuss projects and what we like or what we want to do, and we release them on our site. We basically like internet and the street and graffiti and vandalism and open source and code. So we try to put all together somewhere in the middle of that intersection. So I'm just going to show you a few projects that we have done to different people that were in FAT, so you get the idea of like what we do. So this is the Tourette machine Firefox add-on. FAT is really big on Firefox add-ons. There is even like a community that developed from here that it's called Artzilla that you can check online, which is dedicated to create like art add-ons kind of thing. So, this is like the Tourette machine add-on for your emails. Then this is China Channel Firefox, which was like a collaboration between three of the fellows. And basically, if you install this add-on, you can connect to a censored internet in China from anywhere in the world. So that's worth a try, too. And this is Neat Computing, which is like a series of projects about like soft circuits and more like craft stuff of Becky Stern. So... everything is like on the, like all the schematics and all the patterns and everything you need to reproduce those things are on the website. This is Fog Flickr, which is like Fog Flickr, basically. And you can download it and install it in your own server, so you have your own galleries without having to rely on Flickr. Like a new version is going to be released in a month, so you can. Oh, a new version is going to be released in a month, so you can go to FAT and download it. This is Fog3D. And you can just download your Fog3D glasses from our site. This is like a competition that nobody has won yet, which is Evan did this... counterfeit copies of the pictures on controversy between Shepherd Fairey and AFP, that they're having this ridiculous like copyright like discussion still. So he basically counterfeit both, and he's asking for a cease and desist letter for any of the parties in this controversy. And so, okay. And these are like stickers that you can put on products and stuff. And these are YouTube glasses, so you see any movie with in your TV with YouTube quality. This is Copy Famo, where you can add copyright watermarks to any picture you want. So. This is a Joydick controller. This is a Censursula fan club. So I think in Germany this is pretty popular. So Toby made this fan club for Ursula von der Leyen about her censorship laws. And this is the Copy Me Station that was released this year too, where you can just put your USB stick and download all the nominated Oscar movies to your... and part of the Amazon add-on where you can search on Amazon all the everything you want that might be free in the Pirate Bay. So you just download it for free. And yeah, I think that's it. So we don't have more time.
Oh. Thank you, Geraldine. Great presentation. Where can people go to if they want to find out more?
Sorry.
Where can show more? They wanna have more.
So maybe I can show the video.
You want to?
Can we just show that
time,
like,
right?
4 minutes, maybe?
Or? I don't know. You have to ask them.
Okay.
Sorry about that. We need to connect this.
Yes.
Me
too.
So this one, and again.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Geraldine. That's such a good inspiration for all of us. Pablo is going to be next with a talk about Austrian students who are protesting at universities. I think Geraldine, you're right there. Just a question. Can people be part of FedLab? I'll be at your plate.
I think we are going to give residencies or something like that this year. We don't know how, but they've been talking about that. So yeah, maybe we publish something. But you can just ask. I guess you can just step into the IRC channel and say that you want to stop.
Okay, cool. Pablo, floor is yours.
Hey, you hear me? Okay.
No, we don't.
Yeah, me neither, so. Okay, thank you. No. I'll do it in English, so everybody of you can understand me, but the slides are in German. I thought I should do it in German before. It's about Austrian student protests, usually Austria is in the headlines for its far-right parties, and this time, I think for the first time in history, it has been a center of progressive protests internationally, and the internet played an important role in this. There have been this year protests at schools, at the kindergartens, metallurgical workers, and several smaller protests, many occupations and squads, which is quite unusual for Austria. And internationally, there have been, beginning with last year, lots of education protests. We'll put it online so you can have a look if you don't know it. Why did we have this protest? It's mainly about the so-called Bologna process, which means that universities are becoming more like schools, and that the master is replaced by the bachelor mainly. So in Vienna, there have been protests starting the 20th of October, where the Academy of Fine Arts has been occupied by students after a press conference, and there have been marches of solidarity, and the biggest, how do you call it, where they have the classes, has been occupied. It's called the Audimax. So Audimaximus is the word of the year 2009. And then there have been lots of spontaneous demonstrations with cultural program, concerts with many prominent people and so on. And there was national free day, holiday. So we started to occupy during that time. There have been plenary sessions the whole day. I tried to translate this. It means the occupations have made publicly the educational policies and have had a strong social and democracy political impact or impulse. That's something the students said by themselves. And from the beginning, as I mentioned already, the internet has played an important role. You see the hashtags over there. Uni brennt means university is burning. There has been public discussions about the problems at university, several activities, solidarity from other sections of society. People felt that they could do something by themselves, okay? and there has been no real structure, the student representatives were not participating in this. It was all organized from below, from the base. So on Twitter, this Uni Brennt hashtag was about amongst the top five. On Facebook, the group has more than 30,000 members, etc. Live stream was quite important. Methods were like Iran, Pirate Party here in Germany, Zensursohle, etc. But there was not only one focus. The protest was quite polyphasetical. And therefore, there have been several debates. There was a big criticism against Web2O because people said that the live streams were like Big Brother, that the revolution shouldn't be televised, Twittered, Facebooked, etc., that the online protests were not brought onto the streets, etc. But in reality, many universities were occupied, and as I mentioned already, not only in Vienna and in Austria, but also in many parts, not only of Europe, also of the US, etc. Yeah, I don't want to translate all the demands. You can have a look here. Unsere Uni, maybe there is stuff in English as well. Yeah, I hope it was okay.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. About the remote control, how can I use my mobile phone as the remote control, please? Do you want to go next? Okay. Thank you very much. And after the remote control, I think it was for the Wii, we're going to hear Carson about breaking secure IP. And IP isn't internet protocol, but it's something completely else. He's going to tell you all about it. No, not yet. Okay. If you've got any luggage, you can put it. I don't have any microphone now anymore. I've got two in my hands, but they're not working. Yes, it's working again. Must have been a strange way to see. If you've got any luggage, of course, there is just some luggage space, so please put it there. Right now it's not so busy, but we expect a few more talks today, which are very busy, and it's too bad if you're carrying it around all day. So please just ask over there where you can put it, and they'll show you. Are you ready for it?
No.
Not yet?
Did not prepare.
Okay, didn't prepare. Is it a good idea if Carsten goes first, that you can prepare in the meanwhile? No? Not? Okay, then I just see...
By the way, do you know the cool fish, which is a shell, a friendly interactive shell?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so you know the set shell, or maybe the most of you know Bash. Some of you may know Satchel, and I propose Fish is the coolest shell, as we can argue together with a Club Mate afterwards. So, because the Fish has some cool features like, when you press some command, Firefox, it recognizes, okay, this is a valid command, and it has a syntax highlighting. Or if I write some for I in star, yeah, it makes an Einrückung on these things, ls. And when I what happens when I press the D from end? Yes, of course, it's finished. Hey, it's that. Okay. So, and all the cool things and really easy configuration. Go for it, Fish Shell.
Whatever.
Really, real hackers will find it.
Yes.
Can everyone hear me?
This one?
Yeah. Everyone in the back can hear me? If you can't hear me, raise your hand. Okay, that would be stupid. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm going to talk about this project I've been involved in for like a couple of months. I am not the owner. The owner apparently has had a son, and he likes his biological son better than his digital son, so I'm here. It's about Remuco, which basically you can use your mobile phone to interact with your favorite media player. Currently, that's what we support. But it's not just a remote control. I mean, it has some features, pretty common, like play, pause, next. You can track a player's state information. You can edit a media library. You can rate your tracks and everything. But it's also bigger than that. We are starting to create adapters for things like Ocular. If you want to use your cell phone to present something, maybe a lightning talk, and I would demonstrate it here, but, well, I don't have a USB Bluetooth dongle, so, well. Currently, these are the use cases. You can rate or label tracks. You can see track information. You can always let everyone else control your media player if you, well, if you can trust them enough. You can browse your media library while enjoying the sun in the garden. Maybe in Berlin, that's not really useful because, well, it's cold all the time, I hear. Well, how does it work? You have a client with a Java ME enabled program and Android's in the works. Basically, you either connect via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi, and in the server side, it's Python, so it's comfortable to program. We're implementing network communication. It's a generic player interface, so all you have to do is you have to create your own player adapter if you're not currently supported by Remuco. You import a server module and you start your own class, and it's really easy. All you have to do is override the methods, and it works. Just works like Apple. Oh, well. So the player adapters are the intermediate code between the actual player and the server. It can be a plugin too, or it can also be a standalone script which you run in the background. We have quite a code base right now. We are a gigantic community of maybe four. And, well, we need you. We need more people to test. We need a lot more people to code. Well, we are aiming for world domination. So if you can understand a little Python, oh, you don't have to, but all you have to do is edit a template that we have to create our own media play, own player adapter. And 1 minute? Okay, that's enough. We are currently trying to implement an Android client, but, well, Android people are always welcome. We are trying to remove the Java ME necessity if we can get a web client, web server running on the PC. Then you can just open your browser and the cell phone, and then you don't have to have Java. We're using Dbus some of the time. Some of the other times we are just adding a front end to the player itself. So get in touch, help us. That's the Google Code project. You have a mailing list. The source code, it's mirrored in GitHub and Bitbucket. If you happen to like Mercury over Git, well, nobody's perfect. And there's also the Twitter and the Identica if you want to come. Or if you just want to have some idea and talk to me, I'll be here. My name is Igor. It's not on the slide because Oben's the one that did it, not me. So that's it. Thank you for listening, and please, I welcome you in our project.
Well, thank you so much, Seeker. Okay. Well, thank you. Kirsten, please come up. Yes, this one is working better. Okay. Who did I forget from the speakers? Anyone I forgot? Who still, you still need to do? Okay. Please. We're still looking for people. Is there anyone here who was supposed to give a lightning talk and didn't go on? No? Yeah, you. Okay, so please come to the front and you'll be after
Jeff. And Jeff, what are you talking about? I'm going to talk about swarm robots that you can build at home.
Oh yeah, that was the robots to build at home. Okay, Jeff, you're after Karsten. Please sit somewhere in the front. So it would be easy. And your name was?
René.
And René, what are you talking about?
I want to talk about a web framework I developed for my company, and I manage the open source.
Okay, great. Sorry. René. Okay. Well, the floor is yours, Kirsten.
Okay, this is better. Brief talk about research by a friend of mine who wants to stay anonymous. I'm especially happy to present this, though. The talk goes in two directions. It's one showing a major cryptography screw up, which I like particularly, but it also exposes a lot of information to perhaps open source programmers of, in this case, FPGAs. Everybody familiar with FPGAs? Little chips that, little CPU type chips that can be programmed to do things extremely efficient in hardware. Mac fail. There's no FPGA in here, I believe. Beides, yeah. Jetzt beides. Yeah. Okay. So FPGAs. FPGAs are programmable with pretty much anything by now. You can even program a CPU into an FPGA. The CPU implementation is even given out for free as part of a free software by the main manufacturer of FPGA, Xilinx, as are many other what they call IP blocks. So there are components you can load into the FPGA that do execute algorithms extremely efficiently. Now the manufacturer, Xilinx, does not want you to know what exactly is going on in these blocks, but rather to just place them into your design and use them. This creates some problems for open source simulation tools, of course, since short of knowing what is inside these blocks, there's no way of testing them in your computer, and you have to go all the way of loading them onto your FPGA and running them. Xilinx protects the intellectual property using a technique called secure IP, which... this is a screw-up. I like PowerPoint. Okay. So the IEEE helped Xilinx and a few other big corporations standardize a DRM scheme to protect these IP cores. The idea being that they ship in an encrypted form and the simulation tools can decrypt them, and then the Xilinx simulation tool can run it, the Cadence simulation tool can run it, but of course the open source simulation tool cannot, because they are not part of the club. The way they do protect this looks very strong from the outside. There appears to be RSA keys shipping with the different simulators, different keys even. Those then encrypt an AES key, 256-bit AES key. So up until AsiaCrypt, great encryption. But the problem with this, of course, is that if the keys are shipping with the product, the encryption can be as good as it wants. It breaks anyhow. It is terribly slow. So this is what the file looks like encrypted. You get this file as part of the free download from Xilinx. Using it is allowed, and decrypting it probably not. Being AES 256 bits, supposed to last for hundreds of years, it took three lines of shell script to decrypt the entire thing. The first line being start, prepare the simulator for running. The second line being actually run the simulator while attaching the L-trace to it. And then finally the line that spits out all the private data, intercept every mem copy call when the already decrypted packets are moved around in memory and print that out. So this breaks AES 256-bit, in this case anyhow, where the unencrypted is available. Now, to wrap up, what does this expose? It does expose a full PowerPC implementation for running on Xilinx FPGAs. It does expose full specifications of the FPGA standard cells, timing everything you need for simulating those tools, and perhaps for silicon reverse engineering, which some might do. Extra input for that. So great information source here, and major. Crypto screw up, and I cannot believe this became an IEEE standard that is becoming more and more popular. So hopefully people stop relying on this, and perhaps people start building open source simulators to support this newly available data. Thank you very much. The slides will be in the wiki.
Thank you so much, Karsten. Okay, Jeff, are you ready for it? Okay, cool. So Jeff is going to talk about how to build robots at home, I guess, if I understood it correctly. Rene is going to be last, but we've got some more time. Is there anybody who wants to share something? You wants to share something as well, Benjamin? Over here, two more people. Okay, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Lars Aronson. And I have a presentation about something called database rights, which is a new branch of copyright.
Okay. Again, your name?
Lars Aronson.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. So you get the floor as well.
My name is Florian. I will talk about a project I did last year for the NetED 2008 talk call in Vienna, in Austria.
Okay. And your name?
Florian.
Florian. Thank you. Are you ready for it, Jeff?
That's not right. It doesn't seem right about the logic. Okay. I can't see my desktop.
Okay, are you already done for your presentation? Okay, anybody a joke? To kill some time? Nobody who wants the mic? You have some you want to help? Wow.
Hello everyone. Last year I spoke about the Formica Swarm Robotics Research Platform, which I've been developing with four friends. And this year I'm going to tell you the developments we've made over the last 12 months. Firstly, we didn't do very much. And then a community developed all on its own, which totally shocked us. So, awesome. Lila Fish, particularly at MUC3, has been very active. And she's actually beaten us to it. She's developed a kit and is selling it today of the first version of the robot. Toshan from Antwerp University has also taken our idea and changed some things, and he's using it in a research project. Swarm robotics research is a pretty big area, and it's kind of rare to do it with real hardware, and so that's why our project stands out, and it's very cheap to get a very large swarm. I'm just going to go through some of the features of the robot. So obviously the most exciting one is that it drives around, uses two tiny motors from mobile phones with two tiny rubber wheels, 3 millimeters. It can sense its environment somewhat, so it has ambient light sensing, it can drive towards light or away from light. And it has a floor sensor to look at the ground to see what color the ground is. So you can have some behavior centered around that. They can charge themselves up by driving into a powered rail. So if you have a swarm of 50 robots, you don't have to go around connecting chargers to each one. They just do it on their own when they're hungry. They can talk to each other over infrared. They can download new firmware across infrared as well, reprogram other members of the swarm. And if one guy is version 2 and he drives off and meets someone that's version 6, he says, oh, hi, higher version, transfer it over. And bring the whole swarm up to speed without you having to go through each one. It's all about scalability. So all the pictures you've seen so far were version 1. And it wasn't so easy for people to just start hacking on it immediately. So we've been adding a few features to make life easier. We've added googly eyes first to give you motivation. A hack header on top, the blue part. So you can make backpack PCBs with extra functionality and clip those on top. You can plug it into the standard Texas Instruments MSP430 development USB stick called the EZ430, which is 16 euros, so it's really easy to get the programming going. And the best part is you can now finally buy kits. We've spent all year trying to get them together. And we're not actually shipping them yet, but you can pre-order them so that we don't sell out of the initial bunch. We guarantee we'll ship them by the 22nd of February, but hopefully it'll be a bit earlier than that. They're 30 euros for one robot, and all of the surface mount assembly is done for you. You just have to solder on the motors and a battery, and everything's fairly straightforward. So if you haven't done any soldering before, with the online resources we've got to help you through that, you can still get involved. It's also a great way just to get into microcontrollers and particularly MSP430s. And that's pretty much it. I've just got 3 videos to show you very quickly, or 2. Bear with me 1 second. So this is just a demonstration of the communication. This is the very first code we had on these things, basically, and it simulates a viral infection. So this guy in red, he has the virus and he passes it on over infrared and it takes over the swarm. Yeah, you can see some of them don't catch it because in the early days the CRC checks and the communication weren't quite right, but yeah, you get the idea. Yeah, evolution in action. Okay, so this shows off a bit more complex behavior. I'd like you to look at this guy in particular. I think he drives up, he's got a bit of food, and he pushes it towards the light, and then he backs off. So this is a scenario where there's these little food tokens dotted about, and the robots can see them with their floor-looking sensor. When they find one, they drive towards the light source and leave them there. And then they drive away from the light source when they're low on battery power. And at the bottom, there's a big row where they can charge up at the end of the day. And finally, this is just a little cute video at eye levels. You can see what it's like to meet one of these things face to face. I think you've probably got an idea of the scale, but they're 25 by 25 millimeters and about 15 millimeters high, something like that. Thank you.
Wow. Thank you, Jeff. Great talk. Okay, Renee, are you ready for it?
Yes.
Okay, so please take the stand and make sure your presentation works. Okay, well, unfortunately, it's day 4, so we're almost finished. Oh, yeah, I think so. Wish it could last forever. But, well, we're not finished after the last presentation. We need to clean up this venue. So we might need some help from you. If you want to help, please go to the angel room to heaven and sign up over there. They could really use it. And afterwards, there's a great party at the sea base, which you're invited to. So please help us out and help cleaning up the venue. What you can also do is if you see a bottle, please just throw it away. That would be so helpful if we don't have to do that afterwards. So don't leave your mess hanging around, but just throw it away, and over here all the angels can go home a bit early or just go partying. Wow, that's a great presentation.
To rate the talks.
Oh, rate the talks, yes. Thank you, Benjamin. Yes, rate the talks. I just said it, but you can rate the talks if you go to the schedule or the Fahrplan. There you can press on the presentation you've been to. In this case, it's lightning talks. And you can value it all together. Underneath there's a box, and you can actually say which lightning talk you like the best and maybe add some more information about what you like. Are you ready for it? No, not yet. So please do that. The organization really values your opinion. They want to do it even better next year. I wonder if that's possible.
Oh, yes, it definitely should be a lot better. So next time we plan that we will also create a workshop. So in the evening before all the talks, we will invite all the speakers for the workshop. So we will take a look at the video output about the slides, the content, the timing of the duration, and give feedback to each other. And of course, then you won't see it as chaotic as it is now, but hopefully just, you know, boringly one after the other.
Wow. Learning together, I think that's a great thing. And yes. Who's next? Okay, after Renee, Lars is coming. And Florian is going to be last. So, yes. Okay. Good luck, Renee.
Okay. Just sorry for interrupting. So, I just want to remind you, tonight's the party. It's on at Seabay, so I hope to see you there. And tomorrow, there's the journey to the end of the night. I don't have the URL handy there, but you'll find it in the wiki. And I hope you'll be participating between 7 and 11 tomorrow evening for the big game, The Run Through the City. And now it's René Schickbauer.
Okay, first, sorry, I can't show you everything. My laptop is property of Stargate Command, so it usually takes an hour to get things work. I want to talk a bit about Marplot. That's a web framework I wrote for my company. And I'm not going into technical details, except it's written in Perl. The first target was Windows, so I can run web servers without having to install Apache, which takes weeks to get it right. So I wrote this simple framework, and the reason I wrote it because I had some special tasks, and the reason I was allowed to write it was because we have this economy crisis, so thankfully we can't buy commercial software, we have to write everything our own. The crisis had also the effect, before I was forced to use Microsoft SQL or Oracle, now I'm allowed to use Postgres, so it works faster, it works better, and now I'm even allowed to use Linux for my servers instead of Windows 2003 or Vista. And I'm not going to show you much of the technical details because this presentation is 7 or so months old and it's completely out of date because I rewrote the whole thing. But the basic concept is you have one central Perl class and you have these modules you just plug in. You can put any CGI script you wrote for Apache, put in the wrapper, and it should work. And one of the main things is this is not for the internet, this is for the intranet, so it has the big difference is we don't put all the time into security because the people that can hack it work for our company, so if they hack our system, I talk to human resources and the problem gets escorted out of the door. So if I have a problem, it's mostly a one-time problem. So I can put all my resources in just getting things to work. So if you didn't use the economy crisis to implement open source in your company, that's not my problem, but it's yours. Who is still stuck with Windows on his desktop computer? Okay. The next economy crisis is coming 2012. But you don't have to use Linux. There's FreeBSD and OpenSolaris. Just, you know, pick one. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Renee. Okay, that's great. Lars, are you up here? Oh.
Yes?
Yes? Okay.
I think my slides are on.
Please, the slides. Okay. For all the talk, lightning talk speakers, please send your slides to us because we want to put them online. Okay, so there are two more speakers, and we're going to close with Benjamin. Yes, it's ready? Okay. So good luck, Lars.
This one, yes. Hello, everybody. I'm Lars Aronsson. I'm from Sweden, and I'm going to talk about database rights. I've written database protection here because that would be the literal translation from Swedish, and you should not mix this up with Datenschutz, which is personal data. These are two different things. I'm talking about a form of copyright here. Me, I'm the founder of Project Runeberg, which is a book scanning project. I've also been involved in Wikipedia and in OpenStreetMap, so you get the idea that I'm interested in content, free content, even though I have a programming background. I'm also a software developer, but not an active contributor to free software projects. I'm more into the free content projects. So, you all know copyright protects literary and artistic works, and you also know that copyright expires when a creator has been dead for 70 years. This is why we have free texts by Shakespeare on the internet, but not the latest Hollywood movies are not free, they are pirated. But there are many things that look like books, but that aren't covered by copyright. For example, numerical tables are not covered by copyright because they're just numbers and facts and not literary texts. And this is something that we somehow forgot to explore. We should scan more of the logarithmic tables and put them in Project Gutenberg, for example. Not that anybody needs logarithmic tables anymore, but we could, so maybe we should. So, still, producing a table like that is an investment for a publisher, and some politicians, for example in Sweden, have recognized that this could merit some protection, some monopoly for a limited time. So in 1960, in the Swedish copyright law, they introduced what's called the catalog protection, and this is also in Danish and Norwegian law. If you publish a table of logarithmics, you would get a protection for 10 years. This was later extended to 15 years, and it has been the role model for the European Union's directive on database rights. There's a pretty good article in Wikipedia on the database directive, which you could read up. This was produced in 96 and implemented in the years after. And it protects a published database for 15 years, but these 15 years have not passed yet. So the protection has not expired for any database yet. but it will soon in the next years. So we should, I think that we should have a Project Gutenberg for old databases that have, where the protection has expired. And also every open source and free content project should consider what are they publishing and how should that be put in the public domain. And if you listened to the talk on the from the Open Knowledge Foundation, the CCAN talk, that is one very interesting opening for that. So some projects have already considered this. For example, in Wikipedia, the articles are protected by copyright and licensed under a free license. But if you extract statistics about Wikipedia, that is a database that's protected for 15 years, and what happens after that? Well, the practice in Wikipedia is that these are already in the public domain by decision. And other projects, the OpenStreetMap has had a lot of discussion about this in the last year on how to do this. Is it over? Okay. So in my book scanning project, these are some texts that are of this kind. And you can see that they are younger than 70 years. But we still consider them to be in the public domain already. Yeah, you have the special problem for maps. I mentioned that. And there is an upcoming political issue here. When 15 years have passed after this European Union legislation was introduced, will there be a requirement to extend the protection beyond 15 years? What do you guess? I guess there will be, because we have seen copyright extensions. So it's possible that database rights will be extended to more than 15 years, and we should be prepared for this already. Thank you. That's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Lars. Really interesting. Okay, Florian, you're up next. Well, okay, so the big parties are coming up. It was really interesting what you told, Sven, about tomorrow, the walk out of the year. Really cool. Just a question, because I didn't quite understand it. Can you stand up? Because they're not ready anyway. A database, in my opinion, it's changing over the years.
Yes. So it gets a renewed protection if it is extended. What's important here is that if you get a fixed copy 1 year and keep that copy for 15 years, and there's a big discussion here about screen scraping, does that constitute a published database or not? So we should get a better understanding of what this particular branch of copyright really means to free content.
Thank you very much, Lars. Okay, Florian, you're ready for it?
This one mine?
Yeah. Yes, it works. Good luck.
Ja, ja, ich weiß schon. Wir haben noch Zeit. Okay, ich werde über ein Projekt reden, das ich gemacht habe im Jahr 2008-2009 im Rahmen des ISPA, also Internet Service Provider Austria, Calls für Internet Security. Wie man sieht, das Projekt heißt Community SenseNet und beschäftigt sich im weitesten Sinne mit Honeypots. Und es ging darum, einen verteilbaren, leicht abzudehnenden Open-Source Honeypot zu machen, der nicht nur die klassische Honeypot-Aufgabe erfüllt, dass er jetzt Ports und Vulnerabilities zur Verfügung stellt, sondern der auch Snort-Daten integrieren kann, der SMTP-Honeypot-Daten integrieren kann, der High-Interaction-Honeypot-Daten integrieren kann. Und der eben im Endeffekt über die Welt verteilbar ist, ohne dass wir da jetzt großartig Aufwand betreiben müssten für Infrastruktur. Man sieht, die Sensoren und Clients sind über ein VPN mit dem Internet verbunden. Das heißt, ich habe da eine IP-Adresse, der Traffic wird geroutet an unseren Server über das verschlüsselte VPN. Das geht mit OpenVPN bei uns. Somit, damit kann ich den Honeypot quasi verteilen. Die Sensoren gibt's als Debian-Package zum Installieren, ganz einfach, mit einer GUI zum Konfigurieren. Das Ganze geht dann eben auf unseren Tunnel-Server und normal ist das physisch, sind die Server physisch getrennt, sprich Log-Server, Datenbank-Server und Web-GUI, Tunnel-Server und Snort bzw. SMTP-Honeypot. Wir haben momentan Log-Server, Tunnel-Server auf einem Server. Es gibt noch einen Frontend-Server für die Homepage nachher, okay. Ah, okay, jetzt will ich nicht. Okay, also das war ein NetID 2008 Call. Die Bedingung war, dass alle verwendete Software Open Source sein muss und verfügbar sein muss. Und ja, das haben wir dann noch gemacht. Prinzipiell ging es darum zu sehen, wie ist die Situation in Österreich momentan, was jetzt Exploits angeht, was Viren angeht, was Angriffsversuche angeht, woher kommen sie, wie viel gibt's, welche Trends gibt's und eben Informationsweitergabe und Hilfe, das sieht man dann auf der Homepage. Mit heutigen Tag, ich habe das heute in der Früh noch gemacht, haben wir seit dem 01.01.2009 118.582 Attacken über den Snort. Das sind, bei zwei Providern haben wir eben Snort-Systeme laufen und das betrifft nur die Snort-Systeme, die wir haben, die direkt angegriffen werden. Also wir kriegen nur den Traffic, der wirklich auf unsere IP-Adressen kommt, weil wir sonst ein Datenschutzproblem hätten. Das sind nur unsere IP-Adressen, die angegriffen werden. Malware downloaded, Sachen, die über diverse Exploits an uns verteilt wurden, sind, wie man sieht, 12.434. Also da geht schon einiges an Viren momentan wieder durch die Gegend. Das landet alles bei Antivirenherstellern. Sprich, wir haben eine Kooperation mit VirusTotal.com. Das heißt, alles, was wir kriegen, wird gescannt. Was dort nicht gefunden wird, landet automatisch bei den entsprechenden Antivirenherstellern. Über den SMTP Honeypot sind 91 Viren reingekommen. Das Interessante daran ist, der SMTP Honeypot läuft auf einer Domäne, die völlig unbekannt ist. Die ist nur registriert. Die ist nirgendwo irgendjemandem bekannt. Trotzdem haben sie es geschafft, den SMTP-Server zu finden und dorthin zu schicken. Die Top-Exploits sind immer noch die bekannten DCOM, LSISS und ISS1. Interessanterweise sind diese Exploits seit 2004 bekannt und gefixt. Trotzdem geht es dazu, wie man es anders soll sagen, wie beim Häufling unterm Sofa. Was wir brauchen von den Leuten ist mehr Sensoren. Ja, gibt es für Debian Edge, Debian Lany Packets. Kann man sich installieren, ist wirklich einfach. Braucht man nur zwei öffentliche IP-Adressen. Kein Problem. Integration der High Interaction Honeypots, da werden aufgerufen Leute, die programmieren können. Python, C, was auch immer. User helfen User, es gibt zwei Programme, die dafür gedacht sind, dass Leute ihren Rechner, meistens Windows-Rechner, bei den Leuten muss man eher helfen, die anderen Leute wissen eh meistens, was tun, dass sich die Leute ihre Rechner selbst assessen können, selbst schauen können, was ist da jetzt verdächtig, und da gibt es ein automatisches Analyse-Tool dafür, das vom Datenbank-Backend und vom Algorithmus her das schaffen würde, nur fehlen einfach die Datengrundlage. Also wenn es Leute gibt, die Ahnung davon haben und irgendwelchen Foren schon Malware-Removal-Help machen, bitte sich bei mir zu melden. Die E-Mail-Adresse steht übrigens unten. info@csn.or.at. Information und Forschung, klar, wenn irgendjemand interessante Ideen hat, wie man das erweitern könnte, was man da einbauen könnte, immer sagen, wir programmieren kann man fast alles. Und es geht um Bait-E-Mail-Adressen. Das hat mit dieser Domäne zu tun, die wir registriert haben. Wenn jemand Interesse daran hat, auf eine Homepage im HTML-Kommentar, also als HTML-Kommentar diese Bait-E-Mail-Adresse einzutragen, sich bitte bei mir zu melden, dann kriegt er eine spezielle Adresse, die seine Domäne, der MX-Record geht auf unseren Honeypot direkt, die wird nie für irgendwas anderes verwendet. Und ja, da geht es dann darum, die Adresse wird von einem normalen Menschen nicht gesehen, aber der Web-Spider grast mir die Homepage ab, analysiert das HTML und sieht, dass deine E-Mail-Adresse ist und sendet dort Spam hin. Und genau den Spam wollen wir haben und der Spam wird ausgewertet und geschaut, ob da Viren oder Schadsoftware damit verteilt wird. Und da wäre es halt einfach wichtig, wenn wirklich Leute diese Adressen in ihre Seiten einbauen. Wie gesagt, der normale Benutzer sieht das nicht, da hat man auch keinen Schaden danach. Und das wäre einfach super für uns. Gut. Gibt's noch zugängliche Fragen? Also man sieht, wirkt. URL www.csm.org. Momentan kein Deck, ich habe es nämlich zu Hause vergessen. Mail ist info@csn.org, mein Name steht drunter. Ja, Keyword Community SenseNet heißt das ganze Ding. Also das sollte man eigentlich finden. Ja, irgendwelche Fragen dazu? Ansonsten wäre ich da jetzt nämlich irgendwie fertig.
Dankeschön. Okay, those were about the official talks. Benjamin, do you want to close up? Okay, before Benjamin starts with the very, very, very last talk of this year's Lightning talks.
We have time.
We've got some time. That was what I wanted to say. Thank you, Benjamin. Is there anyone else who's want to enlighten us? with anything?
Maybe no? I should give you the idea that it need not be a real talk. There was people asking me, so when I stay later at the party today, where am I going to sleep, right? So there's probably some people looking for accommodation for the next night.
Wow, good.
Or they'd be looking
idea.
For a lift tomorrow in their direction. So you can come up on stage and say, I'm from this town, who's going my direction is going to give me a lift, right?
Yeah. So what do you have to offer, what do
yes,
you need?
Yes, in the wiki actually have a page for that. But you know, wikis, people don't want to put their data online and their name. And now you can step up here anonymously and just request a ride or whatever. So think about that. Benjamin is going to give us one more talk. There's also a possibility that you could just say, oh, I have a project going on, I don't have any slides. But you don't have to. You just grab the microphone and give us a few words about that, because Lightning Talks is all about getting people together and talking to them while the event is lasting and not months or years later, right? So please think about what you're going to say while Benjamin is giving us another talk.
Yes, so I just wanted to show you something I'm very interested in at the moment. The first thing is I want to finish the small fish thing I had done. I just wanted to show you a cool feature, which is the tab completion, the inline tab completion of wildcards. So look here, we have slash user, lib. This is what you already know. It completes lib, and I've lib 3.2 and lib 64. Okay, I can say only 3.2 and 6.4. This is what you know. And now what I can do is make the slash here and it completes there. So, okay. And I can say, there is something like CA. I want to have everything and completion again. So this is really great. So, okay. But this is not what I want to tell you. I wanted to tell you, if you, ever have to give a talk anywhere and you use LaTeX Beamer, be aware that there is this feature of having a note page. And most people say to me, yeah, this note page feature is not very nice because the Acrobat Reader does not support this very well. You have the note page beneath the other your presentation. And what I've done for this is have some small scripts where you can say, okay, make the quarter of make the window the quarter size, or make it half size here, push it there, and use this with the keyboard. And of course, I have this inside the script, which just grabs the XRender output and calculates something with Ruby about the size. And let's put this to exactly the size where you need it to have the LaTeX Beamer nodes at the position. But you can do something else. You can modify the node page. And when you modify the node page, you can, for example, make something like this, where you have here the current output. And this is a logical PGF page where around everything you have your nodes and you have the next slide and you have the content. And as you can imagine, the output will, you can configure everything in this way that XRender makes the output only in the top part of your monitor. And when you have it then on the screen, everybody will see only this part of everything, and the others will, and you will see the rest. And when somebody says, oh, please go to slide 17, you can click there and go to slide 17. Or go to the page where you explained, I don't know, the registration thing, or this, go there. Yeah, that's really great. And if you have questions to this, or want to have the source code of this, ask me. So just write me a mail. And do not forget this cool tool, which is named Screen Message. No, it's not by me, but it's a really cool tool. Okay, so that's it.
Okay, thank you, Benjamin. Oh, not yet.
Somebody else.
Yes. Okay, anyone else? Yes, yeah. Come on up. So, what's your name?
I'm Rob Spanton.
Hi, Rob. And what are you going to talk about?
I'm going to tell you about student robotics.
Student robotics, that's going to be the next topic. Please think of what you want to do. And right now I give the word to Sven.
Right. Student robotics. I think we have enough students being robots already. But anyway, let me just tell you that our time today, we have at least 20 more minutes. We can fill them. So be the content of these lightning talks now. Speak up. So who would like to speak one more time? Anyone? Just give me a call. Just put up your hand while I look into the audience one more time. And there we go with student robotics.
Well, before we do, Vincent, are you still here? Vincent, you forgot your USB key. So please come and get it right there.
Hello. I had these slides lying around. I thought you guys might be interested. These slides are from a previous presentation, so I'll skip through some. I'll tell you about Student Robotics, which is a project I co-founded at the University of Southampton a few years ago. And what we do is run a robotics competition for schools, for sixth formers. So that's students between the ages of 16 to 18, really. That's us. And our aim is to bring science and technology to young people through the medium of robotics. Because in my opinion, at the moment, engineering education, well, at least in the UK, completely sucks. You don't really experience it until you get to university. I don't know what it's like in Germany. we've got some funding. And part of what we do is design a robotics kit for the schools. And this is the thing I really find fun. And this is actually an old kit now. What we're doing is... you may have heard of the Beagle Ward. It's that red thing there. It's got one of these new ARM A8 cores on with a DSP in it as well. And we're looking to get that on all robots with a TFT display. And an interesting thing that we're doing at the moment is developing a assembler and a compiler toolchain for the DSP on that board, because at the moment you have to use a proprietary compiler, which we don't like. So an example of the sort of competition that we do, we typically have a big arena that's 8 meters on a side. Four robots compete at once, and this was a couple of years ago. The idea is that they pick up these red blocks and take them back to their zones, which are in the corners, and with varying degrees of success. We run a sort of mentorship program where we take students from university out into the schools to sort of guide them through the project, because none of the students have done anything like this before. They've never experienced a project that lasts an entire year. And so they just need some sort of general advice. We're not Lego. We're not Robot Wars. I think we're better than both of these things, because we encourage more mechanical innovation than Lego does. And you can use anything to build your robot, not just a preset number of plastic blocks. Robot Wars, yeah, it's fun, but there isn't as much space for like doing interesting things. And it's really sad to see your robot destroyed if you've been working on it for a year. Autonomy. All of the robots involved are autonomous. They're not remote control like Robot Wars. So, that's a major difference between us and them. All of the software development that students do is in Python. They're doing a web interface, which we hacked together. Everyone seems to enjoy it. I encourage you to come and get involved. Possibly start some sort of student robotics situation in your own area. Our website is there, and my email address is there. I'm Rob Spanton. Email that. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And another talk. Hi. Please walk over there and start doing it, and I'll come stand right next to you. Okay, what's your name?
My name is Robert.
Hi, Robert. And what are you going to talk about?
Let's see if I get this on the screen. I got inspired by one of the other lightning talkers the other day that actually said that, contact me, I'm from the Netherlands Foundation, something, and you could get money for your cool project.
Okay, that sounds really good. You just continue to make it work?
I hope so.
Yes, okay, almost there. So it's about funding, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Okay. We can also do it on a stick and technique. It comes in so handy. Okay. Well, can you talk and work at the same time?
Yeah, I could try to talk. Anyway, I'm at the board at something called the IIS, the Internet Foundation, Internet Infrastructure Foundation. And it's a non-for-profit organization in Sweden that runs a .se. And what they do is that they get a lot of money for people buying domain names, but they also...
I will interrupt you. I'm very sorry for that. Let's copy the slides over. And
but it's not a slide. It's just a URL from a web page.
Okay. So
if we just could get the internet working.
Just to online a bit?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not that one, is it?
It is that.
No.
No, it's not. So anyway, so what they actually do is, since it's a not-for-profit organization, you get a lot of money in, but they also try to spend it on good things. So they actually have this internet fund, and anyone really could apply for it for different projects. So if you have any cool projects that you want to do, it's content and it's both like hacking things and so on. I know, for example, Lars has got it for the project Runeberg and other things. So if there is any... So since I got inspired by this other guy that said that you could go to the Netherlands for that to get money, this is another option if you don't get money there.
Yes, but internet is too slow.
Stop doing this. I need the internet now.
Yeah, and if we don't get the address up there, you could just contact me and give me a card or something like that, and I could get back to you to... Yeah, use that address. And it's the English version of it. And actually, there is a period now. They give out money twice a year. And for the spring, they're starting at the 11th of January. You could standing in your applying for the money. And it will be until the end of March. And you will get money from somewhere in the middle of the summer. So.
So I wrote it correct?
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. So
internet is too slow. Yeah. But anyway, if anyone is interested, just write down that URL.
Oh yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Anyone else? Anyone something who wants to ask something? Tell something. Offer something. Please stand up.
Okay, I have another really quick talk brewing, but I need more time. Can I?
More time. Okay, you have three more minutes. Over there, I saw.
The minutes are going now, so. Anyone in here?
Just right. Two sleeping places for tonight, I offer. If someone has no place yet to sleep tonight. He can sleep at me, two places.
Wow, great.
Thank you.
So I guess we shall be meeting up. I hope very much that we are meeting tonight at the party at the sea base. And, you know, some people, as it happened, stayed longer some years ago, and they fall asleep, kind of. So if you see a sleeping person there, please talk to him, maybe take him home. So kind of adopt a geek scheme here, right? Oh, not now, sorry. Anyway, the topic this year was Here Be Dragons, and I've seen a few of you sketching out with crayons a few dragons at the wall outside, but I haven't really seen many dragons yet, so I dug up this thing here, at least a showy dragon. But I think it's a pity that we didn't do so many things about the motto this year. Now, I don't know about the next year's motto, but if it sounds cool to you, please think about what you can do about the motto. And if you do a talk, bring the motto into your talk. That would be a lot of fun. So for this time, I'd say bring on the dragons. Next year, who knows what it will be. So we're trying here to set up the video. Did you connect it, actually?
I think it works.
Uh-huh, yes. Oh, yes. Whoops.
Yes. Never use better software.
You're not ready for it yet? Well, can I do a quick lightning talk? 30
can
seconds?
Can you? No? Okay.
Maybe.
Short
maybe
time for a lightning talk.
Okay, thank you. Well, if there's some time left anyway. Okay, a few weeks ago, some of the government members came together in Copenhagen. They wanted to change something about the climate in the world. They don't want us to have the temperature raise more than 2 degrees, and they want to spend billions of money to countries in development. Well, of course, very noble of them, but none of them will do anything. Because still, there are two islands of plastics, one in the Pacific Ocean and one in the Atlantic Ocean, 77 times the size of Texas. So that's a pretty big state. Well, what I thought is we can do it a lot better than the governments can, because spending $100 billion on developing countries and saying, okay, we don't want the temperature to raise more than 2 degrees, that's not going to do anything. I think you've got a lot better ideas. So I'm going to offer the sustainable toolkit to all governments. And if you have any suggestions, please contact me. My name is... So have some content. It doesn't matter if it's how to use less energy with your computer or maybe 3D printing. That's, of course, something which reduces garbage. And you can think of a whole tons of other things, how to treat people better, how you can have more freedom. That's all part of sustainability, how to create a better world. And we all want to put that in a sustainable toolkit. So it's not online yet, but I can make it happen within, well, let's say beginning of January, www.sustainabletoolkit.com. And go over there and post your idea. And it will be on, I think, January 1st.
Hi, okay, now I got the thing running. I just want to show you, not now, the password in the default installation is admin, so I want to show you how this looks like when it's in a commercial software. We have a just-in-time booking system that talks to SAP. You can do all kinds of stuff that would be very, very expensive in SAP. I did this in, I don't know, 4 weeks. What's in the basic framework is like the whole admin tools. You can do your Postgres reorganization and defragmentation, whatever. You can do it directly from the web. You can have background deer cleaner. You know, Windows computers always leave stuff around after they uninstall software and they write log files all over the place. You can run a backup cleaner and you can also set variables. And it shows up directly on every computer that uses this. User management. And one thing I wrote, that's what I actually want to show you. There are two cool JavaScript tools you can use for your own web pages. The one is the CK editor. It takes a bit to load on my computer, but it's like the Google Docs only for free. It loads here. You got all the tools you need. Just Google for it, for a CK editor, and you get the same with Excel spreadsheet like thingies. So no need to buy buy Office software or to buy expensive computers so you can run your Open Office everywhere. Just run the open source tools. And I got full text search in the framework, so if you got more than 10 million documents, it's no problem.
Well, thank you. Okay, at 4 there are a few more lectures. In room 1, upstairs, there's photography and the art of doing it wrong. So if you want to know how not to how to take photos, go to room 1 at 4. In room 2, there's Im Herz der Bestie. Anyone knows the translation for that? Sorry? Okay, sounds great. And in room 3, over here, Hacking the Universe, when strings are super and not made of characters. That's going on up here. So, thank you. Anyone else has something to offer, has something to say?
Yes, I have a talk.
You have a talk. Wow. Go for it.
Okay, in between, just let me tell you, as you can see, we with several people, we're not just two. We have help from Valerie doing photos, from Chantal doing moderation, and we actually need more people, I think. The one thing that we didn't do is monitor the feedback from you on the IRC channel. We didn't get a connect today, so we're completely out of that. We weren't able to respond to this. Yeah. So we're looking for another person next time. Right. To help us with monitoring the IRC channel using maybe an UMTS stick, right? So if you have any more ideas or if you can actually donate a VGA switch just for this event, please do. So please give us ideas, write to us, give us feedback on the Pentabuff system or send us an email to 26c3@lightningtalks.de. And please be back, enjoy the show. And here's Aaron again.
Hi, I'm gonna tell you about making your own flexible PCBs from home in a few very short minutes. This is a project I was involved in, making flexible LED matrix displays for a pair of trainers that actually ended up in a Disney film. The deadline for the project was absurdly tight. We had about 3 or 4 days to make all of the electronics. So it was way faster than a PCB house. It could spin us an FPC for almost any amount of money, so I did it myself. You can buy a type of printer which is somewhere between an inkjet printer and a laser printer. It's called a solid ink printer, and it prints liquid wax onto a drum. And you can transfer that image onto the paper or onto copper-clad flexible PCB substrate cut into A4 sheets. So all of the artwork was printed, and it came out perfectly black, crisp wax on copper. It was incredible. I really didn't expect it to work so well. Then you chuck it in a bath of ferric chloride, which is free and easily available, and microwave it to get it going a bit quicker. We'll put the PCB in after that, obviously. And you can etch your board. That's it after etching. So this is just an A4 sheet straight out of the printer into the etch, and there it is. It's also tin plated as well, with immersion tin solution that's like 50 euros for a liter, but it lasts forever. You can only do single sided, but why not fold bits over to hide them out of the way? Everything was soldered in a reflow toaster oven. This was the second ever project I tried with a reflow oven, and it worked very well, fortunately. I cut solder paste stencils on a 100 euro
craft hobby cutting machine for making like Christmas cards and frilly paper shapes, loaded with overhead projector film acetate, 0.1 millimeters thick. Cut out all the solder paste windows and then squeegee solder paste on top. Place your components with tweezers and put it in the oven. These are some rigid PCBs going into the oven. This is totally unmodified, by the way. It just so happens that you turn on the oven, let it crank up to 240 degrees and turn it off, and it happens to fit the right temperature profile for surface mount soldering within, you know, a reasonable margin. There's the assembled circuit, soldered and finished. Wearable electronics don't actually do this, by the way. It's really stupid. Sticking FPCs on shoes is an awful idea. And it led to 4 days of me manually repairing tracks with little tiny pieces of wire because they were worn by dancers who destroyed them in no time. I have a very short video. What possessed me to film in portrait at the end? I've no idea.
So let's tilt our heads.
Yeah. Yes, there's an accelerometer. The rigid PCBs have an accelerometer, and they're mounted on the ankle. And when he stamps, the display lights up. Thank you. Yes, I should announce a website or email or something. Thank you. Warranty void if removed.com. Thank you.
Since she mentioned stuff that's going on at Fort, that's pretty damn cool. And something that's similar that's done by the Noisebridge hackerspace is a project called SenseBridge. Well, it's actually a bunch of projects. So Google SenseBridge and Google the North Paw Anklet, which you can get as a kit, I understand, right now, which is basically a sort of a cloth anklet that you can wear that has a bunch of buzzers on it and a compass, and it makes you feel which way is north. And after a little while, you don't really notice this as a buzzing on your leg. You just sort of know which way is north. It's kind of cool. Secondly, if you want another thing to do it for, I'm running a workshop on how to hack your brain, aka meditation, and an inoculation against the specific techniques that Scientology uses to hack your brain. So if you want to know what they actually do and not just the whole Xenu shit, it's in CO4 at 4.
Wow, that's a cool workshop. Too bad I'm heralding at that time. Okay, anyone else? Something to say? Going once, going twice.
Goodbye.
Yes, goodbye. Enjoy the rest of your stay. Thank you, Sven, for organizing this. Big applause for him. And, of course, the co-star. Come on up. Thanks, the guy from audio, from video. Thank you so much for making this happen.
Thank you for coming, and please give us your ideas for next year, and come by again, and please help us a little out to give us a little less chaotic thing. Thank you very much. Enjoy the show, and see you tonight at the party. Party on. Right.